Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
What is going on, folks? Welcome in to a Friday here on Fox Sports Radio, wherever you happen to be. We are coming to you live from the Geico Outkick Studios, this being the Outkick the Coverage radio program on this Friday morning. Clay will be back on Monday. The next two Fridays and Memorial Day will be inhabited by Jeff Schwartz, who's down in North Carolina. He, of course, played in the NFL for 8 years, and I am Jason Martin. I'm here in Nashville, Tennessee. Dub Yarbrough is here with me. The crew was out in L.A. They're the trifecta. They're spinning the dials radio style for us out there. Jeff, it has been a minute, and I don't know if we're talking armed robbery here. I know we're getting there, but we've got Mr. Snell to talk about. We've got SEC to talk about. We got all sorts of stuff going on, but how are you, my friend?
I'm doing, I guess, as good as everyone else can be right now, right? I'm trying to get through it. I'm in a state where we're slowly opening up, so that's a positive. My concern, just personally speaking, is my football conference. I'm like terrified the Pac-12 conference is not going to play football this year. And my job, my main job, is directly tied to the Pac-12 playing football this year. So just a selfish reason, what I'm thinking about right now. But I hope everyone is staying safe. And I know we're starting to see different phases right now of things kind of hopefully getting back to normal. And I'm glad to be back with you. It's been a long time. We had scheduled to do a little bit of work on this program. And then when the pandemic hit, you know, there's no really reason to take a vacation. So Clay was on full time, but I'm glad to be back. And the interesting part about no sports right now is there's still plenty to talk about. We have not had a time yet where it's been quiet. I mean, even yesterday, I know, you know, you joked about the arrest warrants out, but I mean, that itself, that entire story, if you read the arrest warrant, can take multiple radio segments. It's an amazing story. So Blake Snell, you mentioned that. There's plenty to talk about. So I'm thankful that we've had, with no sports, no, we've had some sports. UFC is back, and NASCAR's back soon. Golf's back soon. Basketball might be back. We've had enough to talk about.
Speaking of NASCAR, Corey LaJoie will join us in the third hour of the program today to talk about what it's going to be like to be in a car again this weekend. And he lives in Charlotte as well, so that'll be a fun conversation to have. We'll get to that. Also, Lance Taylor joining us here in about 20 minutes. We'll talk about the SEC and just what it's like to be near university cities as reopening plans continue to kind of break out amidst the country. But you said it could take multiple radio segments. DeAndre Baker and Quentin Dunbar. Arrest warrants issued in South Florida. Just, I don't know how better to do it other than just to read it to you. According to Miramar Police, Baker's arrest warrant is for 4 counts of armed robbery with a firearm and 4 counts of aggravated assault with a firearm. Dunbar is wanted on 4 counts of armed robbery with a firearm. The alleged incident took place late Wednesday night at a party that began Wednesday evening. According to the arrest warrant, Baker and Dunbar are accused of stealing money and watches with force while armed with semi-automatic firearms. It states that Baker intentionally threatened victims with a firearm. According to the warrant, multiple witnesses said at one point during the incident, Baker ordered another suspect wearing a red mask to shoot an individual who was just entering the party. Then there are conflicting accounts as to whether Dunbar was armed. Some did not see a gun in his possession. Jeff, there's a lot here. There's an awful lot here. The Seahawks are saying, hey, look, we are aware of this situation. We are still gathering information, which is probably the right answer, trying to figure out exactly what's going on. But just the sheer facts and the concepts surrounding this are mind-boggling.
I don't know where to begin. It appeared to be a planned robbery, right? They were at an event, a cookout, I believe, and they robbed everyone. The report, a Rolex, another watch, another three watches, a knockoff Richard, Miley, for $600, and cash were also stolen. So just the brazen part about robbing a cookout where you were invited to come and people know who you are and robbing it anyways, for whatever reason, is pretty freaking bold. and that you are pro athletes. But I think something that people are gonna gloss over, and it's important to actually, this is like the actual thing I take away from this, is that money doesn't change sometimes who you actually are. And we often, you know, people think, well, they have plenty of money, why would they do this? And you could say that for many different things people with money do. Money doesn't always change. It kind of enhances who you are at times.
That's right. I think it does.
And I know that. And I know they have a lot of money. And really, this is completely pointless. And they're going to go to jail if this is true. Of course, you know, you're innocent until proven guilty. And they've thrown their careers away over something that we think is silly and not, and you know, obviously it's not allowed. It's not legal. But, you know, yes, they have money, but sometimes that really doesn't change who you are. I mean, I'll use my wife for example. My wife is fantastic. She's great. I love her to death. But she's fiery, man, and she's from the country, and she didn't even finish high school. Now she has her master's degree. Like, but she does some stuff sometimes, man. I'm like, you don't live in that part of you. That's not who you are anymore. But I've learned that that's who she is, right? Like, that's you can't take. Even though we have money now, even though she has a job and she's awesome and she's fantastic and she's a great leader and what just, she does stuff. And I've realized like, the money doesn't change really who you are at times. And in this situation, that's what I felt here. It doesn't change who these two players are, even though they have money. DeAndre Baker's a first-round draft pick. He doesn't have the money that Dunbar has quite yet. But even then, they stole watches, cash, they had getaway cars, they had guns. It didn't change who they were.
Yeah. Look, it's thousands of dollars. It's tens of thousands of dollars worth of wristwatches. And what about this idea that 2 days before this, they had lost 70 grand at a party in Miami? And then maybe that's when all this got hatched. I don't know. I look at it, and it's hard to gloss past. And I think you sort of answered this challenge. But it's hard to gloss past the money that we know that they were likely going to receive for what they do for a living, playing in the NFL. And you can't separate yourself from it, but I think that what money does is it turns the volume up on whatever character traits you have, both positive and negative. There are a lot of people who can do a lot of good when they do get money, but usually it's not because they all of a sudden become better people because they get rich. It's usually already ingrained in them because of how they were raised or what they believe or what their value systems are, or whatever it might be that way. But if you were irresponsible and you were sort of borderline personality-wise when you had no money, that's not all of a sudden going to become a positive. It's not going to flip everything on its head and turn you into the opposite once you get money. If you don't know how to handle it and you're irresponsible with it before you get it, then you're going to blow it and you're going to end up on an ESPN 30 for 30 broke special years after the fact, because it just means you don't have the structure around you. You don't have the organization around you. You don't have the people around you to tell you what you need to hear instead of what you want to hear. Because a lot of these guys probably do still have a lot of yes men around them, and they just need some kind of structure. Like, I don't know these two guys in particular, but this story is so insane, and it seems so just disconnected from, look at what you do for a living. Why would you do something like this? Well, you do it because it's just, I don't know. If that's what's built into your psyche, I don't know how easy it is to break.
Yeah. Well, it's not. And, you know, even if you go, you know, if we go a step further with our points about kind of the money, you know, if you don't have the money, you're probably not going to have a way to lose $70,000, right?
Yeah,
very true. Then that obviously led toward maybe trying to recoup this money. But, I mean, supposedly they had getaway cars positioned in the right areas. They had a Lambo. I saw someone tweet about it. Like, one of the quick getaway cars was a Lambo. Like, it just, it's out of a movie. Like,
Can you imagine stealing a Rolex watch with your getaway car being worth, like, I don't know, 15 Rolex watches?
Like, okay, so here's the three vehicles. You ready? They said they had a Benz, a Lambo, and a BMW.
And a BMW.
Were pre-positioned to expedite. This is from the warrant. I read the warrant yesterday, and I just couldn't believe it. I mean, maybe the first time I've actually read a warrant. I just had nothing to do last night. I was like, oh, let me read this warrant. Because it just was so incredible. So, Quinn Dunbar participated yesterday in a Seahawks like webinar thing. Man, this is, the NFL, man. There's always something in the NFL. But it's interesting because if you go back to when DeAndre Baker was drafted, there were a lot of quote unquote question marks about his character. They call it character. And, why was he drafted so high? And, character might be confused for judgment sometimes. It's hard it's hard for people to tweet out and talk about people's judgment, right? Because they're not in these meetings talking to these players. They're not talking to on background often as well as NFL teams are. But character can sometimes be referred to as judgment, right? Like, his judgment was questionable. He was drafted high anyways, and now the Giants are going to have a first-round pick that probably never plays football again, if this is true.
What about, like, we talked about the 70 grand, or I mentioned that, losing that via gambling, high-stakes card games. Is there anything to, they're just mad they lost the money, even if they lost it legitimately and their pride just got in the way here and led to this as well? I mean, can you imagine losing the money and then immediately saying, well, we got to get that money back, so let's involve these three cars, this third guy, let's order him to shoot somebody? Like, what?
I mean, I guess.
This doesn't even make sense. Like, how does this even, you said it's like a movie. No, it isn't, because there's no plot here. Like, there's nothing that makes any sense. Like, if this is a movie with Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly and people like that. It's like, yeah.
I'm sorry it wasn't a perfect movie, Jason. I'm sorry. I know it's
a story that's nonsense. Like, unless it's satire, you can't do it.
I was thinking about this last night, dude. I saw Clay tweet about that this felt like a movie, then Colin Cowherd answered him. I was thinking to myself, like, most bank robbery movies, most robber movies, they end terribly for the people that are doing the crime, right? That one person gets away sometimes. Sometimes it's the main actor, sometimes it's not. But they always end terribly. Like, why do you think that a robbery is going to end in a good way when you do it? Like, it always fascinates me when this happens. A bank robbery, a robbery like this. Like, you're not going to get away with it unless you scare enough people, everybody, to not tell on you with your three getaway cars being a Benz, a Lambo, and a BMW. Like, people know who you are. You're at the party. Two NFL players. Of course they know who you are.
One bank robbery
seems so,
movie.
It seems so foolish to even
yes.
think about them.
It doesn't
committing
seem
this crime.
So foolish, Jeff. It is so foolish.
It is so. Yeah,
it seems so because it is so. Overlooked, by the way, bank robbery classic, Quick Change. Bill Murray, Tony Shalhoub, Gina Davis, and Randy Quaid. I won't spoil it for you, but it's fantastic. What'd you say?
How old is that movie? You didn't spoil movie
towards the late 80s. I saw it at the theater. I'm 41. I saw it with my parents at the theater. I've seen it many times. I own it on DVD.
So you're not going to spoil a 30-year-old movie. That's impressive.
Well, if you want me to, I will. You said that it always
survive?
Ends badly. It doesn't end badly in
good.
Quick Change.
We found the one.
Also didn't end, well, I was going to say it didn't end too badly for the Joker in The Dark Knight, in what I think is still the greatest scene in cinema history, the bank robbery scene to open The Dark Knight. But technically, he's really the only one at the end of that. He kind of sets everybody else up, so I guess maybe that still kind of qualifies on your line of one person getting away. But here, I can't wait to see exactly how this story continues to unfold. Like, there have been a few stories. This one and the Earl Thomas story over the past few weeks have just kind of reminded me of what life can look like outside of a pandemic.
These might have happened without a pandemic. I thought my brother and I were close. And then I saw what Earl Thomas and his brother do, and I was blown away. I guess Mitch and I aren't as close as other siblings are.
Let's just stop right there. Let's just end it right there. We got Lance Taylor coming back on the other side. We'll talk what it's going to look like maybe for the SEC with the decisions that they have looming, and we'll talk about the Pac-12, and you know, he's a Rams fan. Maybe we can talk about those new uniforms as well. So a lot of that still to come. Stick with us here on Outkick the Coverage.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
The trifecta, Roberto, Justin Cooper, Eddie Garcia, they're out in L.A. Dub Yarbrough here with me here in Nashville, Jeff Schwartz in Charlotte. Our appreciation to Lance Taylor in the first hour. If you miss any part of any conversation on this show any day, whether we're in or whether Clay is in, subscribe to the Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis podcast. Miss absolutely nothing. If you miss a day, you miss a lot. That's a common phrase sometimes that you hear in media, but it's usually true as it relates to this program, whether you agree with him or disagree with him. So, Blake Snell is a really good pitcher. And I don't know anything about his overall intellect, but I'm sure it might be coming into question a little bit based on the optics of what he said yesterday. But we're going to parse this, and before we even try to parse this, we're going to let you hear from the source. Here is Blake Snell from a Twitch stream, I believe it was, and I think it was yesterday that he ignited this firestorm relative to whether or not he's going to come back and play if the MLB season returns with this new proposal.
No, I'm not splitting no revenue. I want all mine. Bro, y'all got to understand, too, because y'all going to be like, bro, Blake, play for the love of the game, man. What's wrong with you, bro? Money should not be a thing. Bro, I'm risking my life. What do you mean it should not be a thing? It 100% should be a thing. If I'm going to play, I should be getting the money I signed to be getting paid. I should not be getting half of what I'm getting paid because the season's cut in half on top of a 33% cut of the half that's already there. So I'm really getting like 25%. On top of that, it's getting taxed. So imagine how much I'm actually making to play. You know what I'm saying? Like, I ain't making And on top of that, so all that money's gone. And now I play risking my life. And what? And if I get the Rona, on top of that, if I get the Rona, guess what happens with that? Oh yeah, that's in my body forever. That damage is not going to be like, the damage that was done to my body, that's going to be there forever. So now I got to play with that on top of that. So y'all got to understand, man, for me to take a pay cut is not happening because the risk is through the roof. It's a shorter season, less pay, like, bro, it's, yeah, man, I got to get my money. I'm not playing unless I get mine, okay? And that's just the way it is for me. Like, I'm sorry if you guys think differently, but the risk is way the hell higher and the amount of money I'm making is way lower. Why would I think about doing that? Like, you know, I'm sorry. So in my head, I'm preparing for next season and I'm actually preparing for right now, but as if I'm preparing for next season. Like, it's super weird, man. But guys, I'm just saying, man, it just doesn't make sense for me to lose all of that money and then go play and then be on lockdown, not around my family, not around the people I love, and get paid way the hell less, and then the risk of injury runs every time I step on the field. So it's just not worth it. It's not. I love baseball to death. It's just not worth it.
Those words of Blake Snell from his Twitch stream. Yeah, I think that's mainly the general consensus, but let's look at this from every angle. Blake Snell is not one of the highest paid players in baseball. I saw this chart put up a little earlier. Cy Young winner since 2017. You've got Scherzer with $35 million, his salary in 2020. Verlander at 33, DeGrom at 23, Kluber at 13.5, and Blake Snell at 7. So he's not making as much money. He's talking about $3.5 million. I'm going to ask this question, Jeff, and then I'm going to get out of the way a little bit because you being an athlete, you can speak to this because you've had to think about these things in different terms than a lot of us have, and you've always spoken eloquently about these issues. But if it's a health concern and you're risking your life, and if you get the Rona, and it's going to be with you for the rest of your life, then shouldn't it be all or nothing? Like, I would have a lot more respect for Blake Snell if he said, regardless of what happens, I'm not playing. The fact that he's like, well, if you pay me my money, then it doesn't matter if the Rona is in there.
Yeah.
But if you cut me $3.5 million, then I'm not going to play. Like, that to me rings false on the surface, and there I will stop talking.
Yeah, I mean, I would play. You know, the data has shown that for our range, our age, our health, it's not a concern. Now, it's a concern if I get someone else sick. For example, like my father-in-law has had two bone marrow cancers. He's survived both of them. I mean, I couldn't just be, I probably wouldn't be around him during the season. So that's, you know, there's sacrifices you have to make to get money. And I'll tell you, from the NFL side, Jason, I would conclude that almost every NFL player is going to play because the money, you're not making the money up, right? I mean, baseball and basketball are different situations contractually, right? Like they have guaranteed money, and they have long careers, and they have different setups than do football players. The one thing that I think is most fascinating to talk about here, besides the health concerns and the risks and stuff, I don't want to get into that, but the money, right? So let's talk about what baseball is doing, because it's really fascinating, in my opinion, from a player perspective and just the way they set up their league. So the NFL, for example, has a hard salary cap. So let's say the salary cap is $200 million, and that is what your salaries for your team, you can spend on your team, right? And they have a floor, and obviously the max is $200 million. So if there's a year when profits aren't as high, and it might be 2021, it might be next year, when you look at the cap goes down from 200, I don't even know what the cap is at now, but I'm just using round numbers, goes down to 180 or 150, then that's the salary of the team has to fit under that. Basketball has a soft cap. They have you know, sort of a cap, but then you can pay more. Baseball has no salary cap, right? They have a luxury tax. So they have a number, I think it's $206 million. If you go over that number, you have to pay a tax. I looked up, I tried to find what the benefits and salaries spent on baseball, what does that come from? Like, where is the number, you know, like in football and basketball, there's a split, right? 50-50 split, 48-52. There's nothing like that in baseball, right? It's all negotiated. Their benefits are negotiated, and kind of this idea of just paying kind of what the free market is based off no revenues whatsoever. In the last couple of years, as Major League Baseball revenues have gone up, the players are actually making a smaller percentage of the revenue the last couple of years than in previous years. So when things are going well, they're not paying the players as much as they should, in my opinion, or the players' opinion. And then when things are going bad this year, they not only don't want to pay the players, they want to pay them less than they offered, which was the prorated figures per games played, which I think is a pretty decent way to go at this. So Blake Snell he's very wrong in the idea that he shouldn't be paid his full amount. Like, I'm with the owners in that. Like, we're not paying you full. You're not playing a full season. We're not paying you the full amount.
Right.
I'm with you there. But the owner's basically saying the players now have to help us offset the losses. But when things are going well, we're not going to give them more of the cut. When things are going well, it doesn't sit terribly well. And players are not really saying that in the right way, in my opinion. Now, they have a little bit, the MLB PA has said a little bit of that, but that's what they're doing. The owners are saying, hey, look, when things are going bad, we now want to do a revenue split, which you've never done before, but when things are going well, we're not going to reward you in the other direction. So that to me feels a little bit like the owners are trying to screw the players here, and that to me is why the players have not agreed to play this year so far. It has nothing to do with the risk of getting sick or the risk of your family. It has to do with money. And the owners are trying to apply a hard cap to a sport that has never had a hard cap before.
Right. When you think about Snell and what he's saying here, how many people is he speaking for that will not say it themselves?
A couple of baseball players have made this suggestion. Like Clayton Kershaw had said at one point that he doesn't want to be, you know, isolated from his family for a season. He doesn't want to be away from his, I think he has a young son. He doesn't want to be away from his young son for 4 months. But again, in my opinion, it comes back to the way their salaries are structured, right? I mean, baseball players have guaranteed salaries, and football players mostly don't. And that's why other sports are doing this. And basketball, it appears, realizes that, hey, man, if we don't play this year, our cap next year is going to be destroyed. And I don't know if baseball players I don't think you have really realized that yet. Like, if you don't play this season, guys, what do you think next season is going to be? You think it's magically going to be a bunch of money for you? But the way baseball is set up, though, is the play, no matter the profits or the revenue, baseball players get theirs. And that's different than the other sports where it is based off of revenue and how much we bring in. Baseball's never been like that. So the owners are not protected right now, and the players kind of know that. Where in the other sports, basketball and football, the players know they're part of the profits. Them playing is part of how they get paid. In baseball, it's never been that way. So do I feel bad for the owners for not setting up themselves, you know, for not negotiating a deal where they're sort of protected? If now, of course, you never think about a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic is going to shut down your sport. But the owners were not protected for any reason, where in basketball and football, it's more of a partnership where the owners are a little bit protected, but the players also know they have to play to get their money. So baseball is really unique in that sense, where it's not really based off of revenue per se, and that's why there's a holdup in baseball. So I don't know. So baseball players, I guess to answer your question, have a little bit more ground to say, I don't want to play, I guess, because they don't really have to, I think, to make their money, where basketball and football kind of have to do it. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. No, it absolutely does. Now, when you are looking at this from the perspective of the condition of the country and the world, when you're looking at the economy, when you're looking at another 3+ million filing claims,
yeah,
up over 36 million, the optics here and the,
yeah,
it's real easy to call Blake Snell tone deaf and say he's out of touch. And he says, I'm not going to do this until I get mine. And I think the I get mine right now is what rings so false to people. But it's really hard, yeah, for us. It's easy for us to sit here and say this. It's easy for me to, yeah, say this. It's easy for me to look at guys that are making millions and talk about this. I've never wanted to begrudge anybody for being able to make the money that they're able to make playing the sport. And I know a lot of times the sport doesn't love them back when it comes down to it. But how do you feel right now if you're somebody in that Rays organization, knowing that this guy that you want to market because he's fantastic at what he does says this at this point in time when everybody is either a mixture of afraid, angry, over it? Like, everybody is worried about their families and all of this kind of stuff, including all the people that aren't going to be able to go to these, yeah, games, not just because they're not going to be allowed in, but because they're not going to have the disposable income because of the downfall of the economy over the last couple of months with the shutdowns. This rings so like, he sounds like Slater in Dazed and Confused. There's somebody out there that understands what I'm saying. It's just like, he sounds like he smoked a bunch of dope and then went, yeah, on Twitch while he was playing Halo, or playing, I don't know, Battleground or something like that, and just started running off at the mouth and didn't think this through.
Yeah.
I know he's come back since then and said, I just want everybody to be healthy. That's just BS. Like, there's at, yeah, this point, just say, you know what? What I said just was not very intelligent. It wasn't. You understand that I feel like I need to get paid. I get that, yeah, but I also understand there's a lot of people hurting. I don't know how you damage control this, but he has not done it.
No, I mean, look, obviously, when you have players on Twitch and a platform like that, they're going to say things that aren't, you know, that aren't really, politically correct is the wrong term to use here, but you know, just aren't, maybe it is the right term, I don't know, but they're not going to be taken as well as, you know, times when there's a prepared public statement or you're in front of your locker. You know, I will say this, though, like, I see this often, Jason, and I think it applies here, is that, you know, sports and sports salaries should not be compared to other jobs. I understand,
yes, you have that, said that, yes,
people have lost their jobs now. And I mean, look, the employment numbers are what, 30+ million, right? I get it. I've lost one of my jobs. You've lost one of your jobs. Like, we've all lost jobs. You know, I'm obviously fortunate enough to withstand it. But I think that, you know, we just can't compare that. So I understand that it is tone deaf. Like, I'll say this. It's very tone deaf for him to say that. I would never say that. Not in a million years would I try to play a victim right now as a sports star when you've made money in your career and your job's going to be there next year, right? Like, you have no worry that you're not going to have a job. So I would never say that. It's very tone deaf. But I do not think that, you know, saying like, well, everyone has lost their job, therefore you should just automatically take less and play because everyone else is losing their job. I don't know if that really should be the way it's approached, because I understand the idea of taking less, and they should take less. They should take the prorated amount for playing games. You know, if they're playing half the season, they should get half your salary. That to me makes total sense. That is fair, and players are for that. Players have offered that to the owners. That, you know, so Blake Snell's even arguing against that, which is silly. I mean, come on, man! Like, you shouldn't be paid your full amount for half a season. That's ridiculous.
What was it? Ricketts and the Cubs. Ricketts and the Cubs came out and said that 70% of their revenue comes from fans in the seats. You know, things that are happening in the ballpark, and he said that if we're going to play a half season, then we're only going to make 15% of our revenue, because the 30 left over that they would get outside of people being in the stands then gets cut in half.
Yeah, but again, like, should I feel like, as players, should we feel bad for the owners who have routinely?
It's hard to feel bad for owners, even though sometimes you always look at the players because they're more in your face than the owners are.
But so that's my thing. Is like again, Blake Snell should not complain about salary, right? And he should, and I agree with the Major League Baseball players saying, hey, look, we'll take half our salaries, right? That makes total sense. I'm for that. And they should, because they play half the games. But, you know, this idea that, like, the billionaire owners are, you know, they're dying if they don't play this year. And like I said, you're currently not set up on a revenue split. So to tell the players, hey, guys, help us with the burden of us not making as much money this year, but when things are going great, we're not going to make it up to you. We're not going to pay you more when things are going well. Kind of seems disingenuous from the owners.
Yeah, I mean, it's a no-win situation for the players based on the way you laid it out. It's kind of like originally, like you used to talk about being LeBron James's teammate. There was no advantage to it because he was going to get the credit if they won, and you were going to get the blame if they lost. Like, there was never a way where you were going to win in that scenario. I still have one more point to make about this when we come back, but then I do want to talk about college football and what might happen out west with your beloved Pac-12, and this Russell Wilson trade story and thing that was going around yesterday. There's a lot of fascinating stuff happening, even though games are not being played. But I have one more point to make before we leave baseball when we come back. If you have thoughts, Jeff's at Jeff Schwartz. I'm at JMart Radio, and we'll be right back. It's Outkick the Coverage on Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
We are in the Geico Outkick the Coverage studios. We appreciate that, Eddie. Jeff is in the tertiary Geico Outkick studios down in Charlotte, North Carolina. You can find him on Twitter at Jeff Schwartz, at GEOFF, in case you were wondering. And I am Jason Martin. I'm at JMart Radio. So there's now also Nolan Arenado out here defending Blake Snell. So we're getting a couple people out here, Jeff. There are a few.
I don't think it's rooted so much in the idea of getting sick. I think it's rooted in the money concern about how the owners are proposing baseball players and them split up the money. Again, I don't think it's the virus. I don't think that's what they're worried about here. I think it's a part of the argument for why they should be paid better. But again, the structure of baseball does not protect the owners in a situation like this, which they never expected.
Corey LaJoy, NASCAR driver, joining us right now here on Outkick the Coverage. NASCAR happening at Darlington in a real car. There's not going to be virtual cars. There's actually going to be a race with stakes in this country again. Corey, this has been quite a year for you. No question about that. A lot of highs and some lows, certainly. But how excited are you just to get back into a race car?
Well, I think you touched on it without me saying it. I was ready for those virtual race cars to be put back in the virtual garage and get the real ones out. It was a great outlet to get our sponsors and keep our sport relevant on national television for sure. But there's nothing like the smell of race fuel or getting after it, especially at Darlington here. So, man, I'm excited for our team and our sport overall to get the sport back on the rails and get after it.
So I want to ask you some specifics about that, or we do, but I'm going to ask you a different question right here, because obviously there was the Ryan Newman thing that happened, and it feels like it was so long ago just because of how fast time seems to have passed over the past few months. And then all of a sudden this happens. And I noticed that you are very open and very overt about your faith.
And my question for you would be, and I've thought this a lot over the last couple of months, if I did not have faith as the prominent place that it has in my life, how would I have hope right now? Because what institutions haven't fallen? What things that you could have relied upon haven't either betrayed you or done something completely unknown in an uncertain time? So my question would be, how important has your faith been this year with all that you and your family and certainly the sport and the country have endured? You personally, how has that kind of been your rock and your foundation?
Man, that'll preach right there. What are you doing on Sunday afternoons? You ought to take up a new day job. But yeah, you said it perfect, man. I was reading a good post the other day how, you know, people were worshiping musicians, so he shut down the amphitheaters, right? People were worshiping money, so he crashed the stock market. Now I don't technically agree that you know, God does these things, but God doesn't waste these moments to find people right where they're at, you know. And I mean, faith is the rock for every asset in my life. Every high and every low, he's the stability, you know. And I think that it's really easy to fix your sights on comparison, because comparison's the worst, and it's easy to do in our business. With all you have to do is go on Racing Reference, and you can see where you stack up in your career statistically, or you can just look outside and see, you know, your house size compared to somebody else's. But the only thing that kind of makes my happiness and contentment stay somewhat level is, you know, is my faith and my wife too, just to kind of keep me grounded and change my perspective in a way that, you know, how I run my results on Sunday don't reflect the person I am, you know, throughout the course of the week or my life.
One other quick thing I was just thinking about, you know, Charlotte, and we're talking about Darlington. I was born in Martinsville, Virginia, and I know how important that NASCAR community is to the economy of that small town. I grew up in Winston-Salem once I moved from Martinsville, so I've been kind of all around. How important is the sport just getting back in some form? Just these communities, these smaller towns. We're not talking about New York City here all the time. We're not talking about Los Angeles. We're not talking about Houston. Now, yeah, there are some races there. But some of these small communities, some of them rely on the race or two that they get every year to survive with tourism and everything else. Now, without fans, that's going to be a problem. But anything that gets us a little bit close to normal has to feel at least a little hopeful for these smaller towns, right?
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, you feel for Martinsville, you feel for Bristol, Virginia, Bristol, Tennessee, rather. You know, and a lot of these small town tracks that we go to, that when the NASCAR circus rolls the town, is probably half of the year's income for hotels or restaurants or whatever the case may be. So, you know, I think everybody as a whole, whether it be our sport or NBA or NFL or anybody, and just businesses in general, need to get going and, you know, assume some of the risk that we're always going to be liable to get sick. You know, I probably shouldn't dabble any more in it than I am right now. But
sure,
you know, it's just I just want to get back to the track. I know everybody in NASCAR wants to get back to the track, because there's lots of jobs dependent on that TV revenue coming in through putting our race cars going around in circles on live TV. So that's what we're trying to do, and we're just trying to provide for the sport and our fans, as well as the people working in it.
It appears in other sports, baseball and basketball, the players are having a big say in how they return to the sport. How much say did you guys have as drivers in how your sport would return?
Not much. I mean, I think that NASCAR had the, you know, they know the protocols or the how small of a margin for error they were going to be under. So they're probably being very, very, very precautious when it comes to giving us literature and going through the hoops when we get to the racetrack. You know, that I would assume it will be lightened after the first couple of weeks, and we realize that you know, the boogie monster is not going to get you. But I think that, you know, NAS, we our sport's unique in a sense that we don't have physical contact, right, to compete. Right. We're obviously strapped in our cars with helmets on. But our sport, on the other hand, is so reliant on fans being at the track as well as, you know, being in the pits and hanging out and getting that experience of seeing the cars up close during practice or even the race. You know, it's certainly another element just when you stick us on TV and you don't get the fan interaction at the racetrack. So, like you said, just getting to the racetrack and getting some sort of normalcy back will eventually be steps closer to getting back on the right track with fans and where we want to be.
I'm curious how you kind of stayed prepared to come back, because, you know, the date for coming back had kind of floated. It was Memorial weekend. Now, obviously, it's a weekend before. How do you maintain the training regimen and being prepared to be ready to go back when the kind of date is floating for when that return might have been?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I had to stay ready. You know, working out's an outlet for me just to relieve stress anyways. So with our little man, he's 7 weeks old. So he came right to start all this. So anytime I could sneak away for an hour and a half workout, I would certainly take my opportunity and do it. But, you know, I have certain ways that I feel like apply best to the physical demands of the car. But there's nothing that readies you like the real thing, right? And I think anybody who says they're not a little bit nervous is probably lying to you. But, you know, I think that I'm as ready as anybody, but I think there are some people that probably didn't take it very serious through this, and they're going to jump in for 500 miles or 400 miles on Sunday, then turn around for another 300 on Wednesday, and they're going to be kicking the butt pretty good.
Corey, I know it's going to be exciting. Yeah, it's going to be a little nerve-wracking, and maybe it's going to feel a little strange for the first little bit, but we're excited to watch it, and I know it's been, you know, a year that some parts of it you definitely would much like to forget, but we wish you the absolute best and continue to rely on your faith. It's not going to let you down.
That's right. Thanks for that.